FBI Studios. This is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Roth. Hey there. If you're listening to this, then you are amongst the elite, the special forces of the Truth and Justice Army. This bonus episode is raw. As I mentioned in Sunday's episode, this is kind of a long and complicated conversation between me and Ian Patterson. Ian is one of the experts that I was working with dissecting all these cell phone records, and in this conversation, he's trying to explain to me why he thinks Becky's phone had a signal after 7 p.m. We also get into a couple other things, like some voicemails that were never recovered. It's all in there, it's long, and it doesn't sound great, but hopefully you're getting the information out of this that you were looking for. I wanted to make sure you guys have access to the full conversation, even though we didn't end up using it in the main episode. But again, keep in mind, this is 100% unedited. We just don't have the time to edit an extra episode this week. So you have to pardon the breaths, the coughs, and the retakes. I cleaned up sound a bit and tried to balance the levels, and that's all. After a quick break, I'll leave you to it.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that you did it.
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special.
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just Say You're Sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Ian, can you introduce yourself and give us a little bit about your background?
Yeah. Well, my name is Ian Patterson. I worked at Verizon Wireless for 11 years, customer service, tech support, and leadership for both. Spent probably the last 9 years in tech support and tech support leadership. I actually designed a training and delivered that to our call center here about how to read cell records. That was 2018. I'll put that out. So very familiar with reading call records and trying to figure out what they're telling you.
All right. And in this case, we've got some perplexing, I would say, to put it mildly, we have some perplexing stuff going on with these call records.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the issue that we have is, I think if you look at any of these records by themselves, they seem to paint a story. But then when you start cross-referencing them, we start to run into some conflict. So the main questions we have, the main focus of what we're talking about today, or a series of calls, five calls to be exact, from Becky's landline out to either her cell phone or Javier's cell phone. And these calls occur at 7:11 p.m. and 53 seconds, 7:12 and 17 seconds, 7:12 and 53 seconds, 7:14 and 45 seconds, and 7:35 and 9 seconds. Now, these calls go, the order was from Becky's home to Becky's cell, Becky's home to Becky's cell, Becky's home to Becky's cell, then Becky's home to Javier, then Becky's home to Becky's cell. And then that is pretty much the end of the call records where we have anything as far as on Becky's home records or cell records. But, until later that night. Which, you know, when I looked at them, I didn't really think much of it because it's kind of in the midst of Becky seemed to really like the phone. She used it a lot. There's a lot of back and forth from several numbers throughout the evening after she got home from the home from work. And I just assumed, you know, her calling her cell phone, what was her checking her voicemail. When I was having you look over the lines, you had a little different take on that. Can you explain from your understanding? And Becky's cell phone records, which match up with her home records, what was going on with those calls where Becky's house phone was calling her land or her cell phone?
I think it's more likely that somebody was at the house calling her phone. You've got to go back in 2006. We don't have digital voicemail. You call the voicemail. Basically, it's going to prompt, play a greeting. And if you're calling from a different number than your cell phone, you've got to interrupt that voicemail greeting, enter in a PIN code, usually 4 to 8 digits, and then it would go through whatever prompt. So you have 4 new messages, 5 saved messages, or whatever. Press 1 to play, or press 3 to skip, or whatever else options would be there. So she'd have to call in, listen to those prompts, and work her way through that option tree to get to a message, and then listen to the duration of the message. So when you're seeing calls like these where it's 11 seconds, 13 seconds, 34 seconds, 7 seconds, it really becomes hard to see somebody speeding through that call tree and right. Getting in there, because you know, most people don't leave a message just like, you know, hey, it's Ian or hey, it's Bob. They want to give some sort of explanation why they're leaving a message. And that's hard to do and get through all of that and listen to the message in such a short time.
Let's look at the first one at 7:11 and 53 seconds. That's an 11-second call from the landline to Becky's cell phone. And mm-hmm. in 11 seconds, what does that 11 seconds mean? Would that be, would the time start running on that once the, say if her phone was out of service, once the voicemail greeting started playing, or would it be once a tower was originated? Because before we can even get to, you know, pressing pound and then starting to putting in your PIN code, there's got to be some ringing or something in there, right?
Right. So if the phone has service, it's generally going to ring between 4 and 6 times is pretty much the industry average. So 5 seconds between rings, you get 20 to 30 seconds. And then it'll switch over to, it'll forward over the voice. Once the voicemail picks up, if it's an unanswered call on the cell phone, that's when it will start billing. Looking at these records from the home, it appears that what's happening is once the voicemail picks up, basically it answers that call. That's when it starts calculating the time.
Mm-hmm. So that 11 seconds, that wouldn't include any rings. That would be hitting the pound sign. You know, it's the greeting starts yep. playing. You hit pound. You enter your code. And, you know, right. I thought maybe it's possible, you know, she didn't listen to any message, but maybe she was checking to see if there were any. So if it said, you have no new messages, then she hangs up. But we have a couple other issues there. One is she calls the number at 7:11 and 53 seconds, 4:11 seconds, which means she hangs up that call at 7:12 and 4 seconds. At 7:12 and 17 seconds, she calls it again. So she just called and right. it said there's no new messages. Why is she calling back 13 seconds later? And then that one goes for 13 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So that gets us up to 7:12 and what is that? 7:12 and 30 seconds. She hangs up. And then 23 seconds later at 7:12:53 calls again. And so it's hard to comprehend for me why she would call it. If she was checking her voicemail, why she would call 3 times, boom, 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 back to back like that.
Right. And that's, yeah, that combination of the 3 quick calls, and she's got those calls matching on on her cell phone call log, it's atypical behavior. It's not out of the realm of possibility that somebody might do that, but it'd be uncomfortable.
Well, then why would you even do that? And then we have another issue you presented to me, which kind of shocked me. As you said, from reading these records, that Becky's cell phone had service for these calls.
Right. Yeah.
Go ahead and explain how you're able to determine that the phone did have a connection.
Yeah. So with the cell record, usually what you see is if there's no service. Doesn't matter if the phone's in airplane mode, powered off, sitting in a Faraday cage, or just in a bad reception area. No service is no service. So the network tries to reach out to the phone. If it can't page the phone and say, hey, I'm trying to send you a message, send you a call, at that point it immediately kicks it over to voicemail and you get some sort of flat out mobile forwarded or nothing, depending on how the company recorded that. And then if the phone is on, it's going to page the phone. So it's going to reach out and ring. And then after it rings so many times, it doesn't get answered. Then forwarded to voicemail. And the voicemail picks up. It records on the cell phone side. And you get basically a double record. At one time stamp, essentially, you'll have a mobile terminating call and a mobile forwarding call. So terminating is just where it's coming into the phone. The forwarding is where it goes to the voicemail.
So what happens if somebody's calling on these records? Like, say the home phone was calling Becky's cell phone. Say the call here that has 11 seconds. It rang twice. And then she just hit end, like just to hang it up. Would that then show it? And if at that point the person just hung up and then picked up and called again, would you see the forwarding to the voicemail then?
You could. So if Becky answers the call and then hangs it up, no, it would just be a mobile terminating call because it was answered and then ended. If she hit end call, forward it to voicemail, declining the call and then sending it to voicemail, that would show that it was this type of a call where it would have both records. Now, this is 2006, so there aren't, the iPhone's not going to come out until June or July of the next year. So a lot of that type of functionality wasn't broadly available. It existed, but there wasn't a huge amount of that widely available.
So in these calls, we see they're all three different time lengths. So you have same call from the same place to the same number. One's 11 seconds, one's 13 seconds, one's 34 seconds. They're coming in quick succession, and they don't go to voicemail. But you think that these calls did connect as though so she was. But did they show a tower where they connected, or can you just tell that it connected somehow or another?
Well, I mean, it was connecting to her phone. She didn't answer it, and they did go to voicemail because on her cell records, it's got everything in pairs, call forwarding and mobile terminating. So it was whether she had a phone that could decline the call and forward it to voicemail, or it wasn't starting to record until the voicemail picked up. These calls came in and they went to the voicemail. It doesn't give us any cell site or anything like that. Because there was no, it didn't have an active registration. Mm-hmm. The phone, basically, when your phone powers on, connects to the network, it requires generally some sort of positive registration event. So calling out, answering a call, or sending a text message. In 2006, those would be your basic options. Now we have accessing data intentionally. So, but you'd have something like that where the phone's coming on and then saying, I'm reaching out and doing that. It's going to do the same thing when you are disconnected from the network for any reason, not just when it powers on. Could be if you were out of service and it entered a service area, it's going to be able to see the phones there, but it won't be registered until you would answer the call or to place a call out or send a text message.
Okay.
Force that registration through. That's why on this it would make more sense that when she, at this point essentially she was at home. She left. Somebody's at home trying to call her. Her phone's got enough signal to receive the call. She doesn't answer it, so it never registers a cell site location. And then it goes back to who's trying to reach her at that number.
So why would you think that the times, the 11, 13, and 14, do you think those would be the amount of time that the phone was connected to the voicemail then, and not the amount of time before it got forwarded to voicemail? Or other way around?
On her home records, the 11, the 13, and 34, that's the amount of time the voicemail was actually connected.
Okay.
So in her cell records, the same calls are 14 seconds, 15 seconds, and 36 seconds. So the two systems are recording slightly differently, but the Verizon, not Verizon, but the cell phone end only starts billing. What it's doing there is calculating the duration after the voicemail is engaged.
Okay. So everything on the, and this is where things get perplexing. So all that makes sense. Everything indicates that Becky had left. Someone was calling her from the landline. Those calls were sent to voicemail. And that's the 7-11, the two 7-12 calls. At 7-14, the home phone, the landline called Javier. That shows up on the home records. And at 7-35, again, the home phone calls Becky's cell phone. Those all appear the same in the records, but our conflict comes in that in between there, the landline, we see on Robert's cell phone records, the landline called him at 7:13. There's a call on Javier, or the home records, I think, that say the home line called Javier again. And then at 7:27, we see that the home line called Robert again. And then at 7:34, that the home line called Christian again. But so and 1 minute before the first call to Becky's cell is the home line calling Christian. And what is it? 1 minute before that, Christian called the home line. So they're like sandwiched in the calls right before were Christian calling in and then the landline calling Christian, then the landline calling Becky's cell, landline calling Becky's cell, landline calling Becky's cell, landline calling Robert. But the conflict with those is there are five calls in the record that night where the landline called Robert. Looks like it only connected one time where they actually spoke. But none of those five calls show up in the home records. They only show up in Robert's cell records.
Right.
So if I guess the first question we have is how confident are you that Becky's cell phone had service at this time?
Maybe like 95% to 97%. That's one of the things you work in tech support. Long enough, there are myriad of possibilities out there that could pop up. Certainly very confident in it. If you look at it, the other activity, and what really makes me lean towards that more than anything else, is look at the other activity on there. So on the evening of the 15th through morning of the 16th, small hours, between 11:50, 6 p.m. on the 15th and 1:26 on the 16th, 1:26 a.m. But Becky's cell phone has no activity. 11:56 p.m. to last anything that's on the 15th. She's got nothing until 2:21 a.m. on her cell phone. That same time, in that gap, you should say, at 6 minutes, almost 7 minutes past midnight, her home phone starts calling out. That was to her ex.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's got a series of calls back and forth there, right up until 1:30, and then. Then her phone starts picking up signal again at 2:21. Her cell phone's back on the network 2:21 with mobile terminating calls that are being forwarded to voicemail. And she has that same pattern showing up for several hours, and then she starts having more use. And then we go back and look at the home records, we see the same thing happening later in the evening of the 16th, and then midday on the 17th, when her cell phone cuts out, has a small gap where there's nothing happened. We see the home phone start picking up, calling the same numbers that she was calling on her cell phone before.
Mm-hmm.
Then you run into the same thing that happens again later in the afternoon on the 17th between basically about 5:12, 17:12, and 35 seconds, and then 18:40 and 6 seconds, 6:40 and 6 seconds. She's got some calls in there, back and forth with Javier. And then he cuts out from the home. And then she's got nothing showing up until the 7-11 call. And that consistency of having no activity on her cell phone at all, no incoming text messages, anything like that during those times, and the activity on the home phone, it starts making it look like when she's at home, she has no service. We know she has no service there. There's nothing coming in or out of her phone. And she's got, in these 18 days, including September 1st through the 18th, he has a little over 2,000 calls and calls and texts and things like that. If we look at it, it's 4.7 per hour. If her phone's on every single hour,
mm-hmm.
then when we start cutting out times here, she doesn't have service or she doesn't have anything happening for at least 2 hours, then it starts jumping up to 6 point something. Okay, it worked out. It really picks up on if she's going over to like 6.3 events per hour.
Mm-hmm.
So she's using her phone a lot.
Yeah, there's,
and to see that
she uses it enough that you can almost tell from reading like the whole month's records. you can almost tell when she's sleeping.
Yeah.
Because it's either the cell phone or the landline is in constant use.
Yeah. And she, I mean, she does have a decent pattern there where she's got, you know, the same, generally the same, you know, 6 hours or so where she's got nothing happening on either. And then, you know, the other concern is that she's supposed to have, supposed to be at work. You know, maybe she's, nobody's calling or texting or anything because she's supposed to be there. And if she worked any of the other days of that month, she was using her phone all the way through her shifts. And the other weekends have a few hours where she wouldn't have been using it, and most of those were after we figured a graveyard shift would end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it seems like the call had service. Do you have any explanation as to why the calls to Robert wouldn't show up on the home records?
Not anything that's really concrete. The most common things are that the carriers didn't bill similarly, or that in the record, depending on when they received it, when the police received it, the billing can actually end up being delayed. It was more common back in the early on than it is today. Because today you pretty well get instant results. Things will show up maybe 20 minutes later. Call records. Back then, it would take at times weeks to get information coming in. Because you're having to go to this other carrier, find out what information they have, and then have verified by the network team, and then it comes over. So that's why you can have delayed billing. Records aren't always immediately available. So even if they waited a week, 10 days, they probably had most of it on the home record. But there may have been something more. That would be the most common thing. But you know, at this point, it's speculation as to whether that was what had happened or why we have the differences on the home record and his cell record.
Right. And I'm trying to figure out, so some of them make sense. And maybe the old, I'm trying to remember back what the landlines looked like. I'm trying to make sense if it wasn't Becky calling her own cell phone, if it was someone else calling, then that would mean, because sandwiched between the calls to her own cell phone are, and to Javier, there's also two calls to Robert and a call to Christian. That would mean that whoever was at the landline knew their numbers and was calling them. And I don't know if there was a feature on these phones where you could scroll back through and see who they talked to last. I remember caller ID from incoming calls, but Robert never called her. She only called him, so he wouldn't be on the, you know, the caller ID or anything like that. So it makes me lean towards that it's her checking her voicemail, but like we discussed earlier, that seems really odd behavior for to do it three times within a minute and a half to continue to call and check the voicemail.
It would be very odd to have that type of activity.
Was there anything back then where there was like a delay when someone left? So we have, you know, we see in the calls, I mean, it looks almost frantic. You know, there's the one, she talks to Robert the one time, and then she's calling Robert, and he's just sending him all the voicemail, it looks like. Calling Robert, calls Christian, that finally Christian called her back at 7:09, and she missed it. That's the call that rang. It was 1 second on her home line and 24 seconds on Christian's record is right. Because she saw that he tried to call, if she was then calling her cell phone to check her voicemail to see if he left a voicemail. And if there was like a delay where like she called, there's no messages. Like, well, it's only been a few seconds. Let me wait and call again. Nope, there's no messages. Let me wait and call again.
Yeah, and something like that would be possible. The problem is that, you know, when we look at Becky's other cell records from throughout the month, there were gaps of 2 hours or more, like 26 times.
Mm-hmm.
And in those gaps, there's no activity at all showing up in her cell record. It's just gone.
Mm-hmm.
To me, indicates that her phone is out of service, whether it's again powered off or in no service area, anything like that. And then, so she got that just the complete gaps in the coverage. And then, before or after those points, when service starts coming back, she has the same thing happening where she would have calls or something coming in. And then after she makes an outbound call, then it starts registering the cell site. And we don't have any other outbound calls after that. And we don't have anything where it's showing up on her cell phone side that there was an incoming call. And that's where if she were frantically calling her voicemail to check and see, you know, what message was left, if it's right there, we know she doesn't have service there. We know in these other periods when she has no service, nothing shows up in her cell phone records. Why are these calls showing up in her cell phone?
Right. Yeah. Cause it would be ringing right there. And I guess that, we have to come back to that. If she had service, we know there was no service at the house. I mean, there's no cell towers anywhere near there. The closest one is in down the mountain on 74, you know, 15 miles away and down on the other side of a mountain. And then there's one in Anza, which is another, you know, 10, 15 miles away the other way. There's nothing even close to there. So that's interesting that her, I don't know what to make of it. I don't know. Cause then we also have at 11 o'clock, what is it? 11:02 Javier calls Becky's cell phone and that appears to also have service and goes to voicemail. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Yeah. At 11:02, 11:02:07, and then throughout the 18th, it would appear that her phone is on, getting service, things are ringing in and going to voicemail. And we know for a fact that at that time, by 11:02, she's already dead.
Right, and if the phone was in the house, it would have been burned up.
Would have been burned up. If it was anywhere near the house, it wouldn't have had service.
Right, and it probably would have been found.
Yeah,
from the search around there. Is there a time when if it's sitting somewhere and is powered on, eventually the battery's going to die. Is there a time where you can tell that it's just cut off? It's done.
On these records, it looks like it ran all the way through at least to the 18th. The police didn't get anything past the 18th. And what I was seeing, they basically just got this first 2.5 weeks, and then it stopped. And then one of the other things that, you know, popped out at me, reading the some of the details on the search warrant application, they had The police had wanted to search her call log. They got that through the 18th. And then there were apparently some voicemail messages. There were supposed to be four voicemail messages. And then they submitted a subpoena for that. Another warrant or search warrant on the 21st. And were told that they'd already been deleted. And when the voicemail messages were deleted, they're just gone. They were there, presumably on the 18th, the 19th, the 20th, when they issued the first warrant. How did they disappear?
Well, the other question is, how did they know they were there? If they didn't have her phone or they didn't have the phone records yet, how did they know there were voicemails there? Does it? I don't have that paper right in front of me. Does it say what time, or is it specific about what calls they're looking for voicemails for?
It does not. No, it just showed that they received that. That Thinkgood did not provide four voicemail messages that appeared to be sent to her cell phone on the 17th, and then they spoke. The police spoke to Singular. Singular said, basically, you need a new search warrant for it. They got that done. And then they weren't there. The voicemail messages, and basically, you have to have somebody who knew the voicemail PIN code, password to get into it, so they could check it remotely and then get rid of it. Or if the service to those lines were terminated, relative or somebody had death certificates, called up the provider and said, "We need the service disconnected."
That did happen. I don't know at what point, but I know there's a call with Becky's sister a couple weeks after the murder, and the officer is upset with her because she had canceled the cell service. And of course, she's pretty indignant about it too. She's like, "Well, you guys haven't been answering my calls. Why would I know not to shut off the phone service?"
Right. Yeah, that's fun. Yeah. If it were a couple of weeks later, when that had been disconnected, I don't know when it was, but if it's a couple of weeks later, got disconnected, and then they're asking for these, seems way more plausible. That scenario happened then within 4 days of the family dying.
And I'll have to go
take care of the administrative stuff.
Yeah, and I'll have to go back and review, because I know the call to her was a couple weeks later, but I don't remember if she even said when she had done it. But it sounded like the purpose for the call, the reason the police called, I'm guessing maybe was because of this warrant, because they called her and were asking her, "Hey, why'd you shut the cell phones off?" So she might have done it the next day, for all I know. I don't remember, or if she even said.
Yeah, that would certainly do it. Yeah, I don't know that she would do
it. Otherwise, the calls would the voicemails would have stayed on the record, right? They would have stayed there unless somebody manually deleted them.
Right, they would have been there until somebody had gone in and dialed in and then deleted them. Over my years at Verizon, I've talked to tons of people who had decade-old voicemails from loved ones who passed on. They just stay there. As long as you save it, it's going to be there. And if you don't delete it, it's still going to be there.
Right.
But if the service cuts out,
they're gone.
That's done. Yeah, and then basically all the voicemail systems purge instantly. So it's not just that they got deleted and it's recoverable. If you get a call in the next hour, as soon as it's deleted and that call to the voicemail ends, the voicemail system will purge and wipes everything out, even like a backup holder.
Right. Well, what's more interesting, because I'm sure it's probably because she shut the cell phones off, because I know that was an issue. But what's more interesting to me is how they knew there were four voicemails that were relevant. And then looking through the records, I think there are only, they had to be looking for the calls from, because during like any relevant time frame, we have the four calls from the landline to her cell phone that went to voicemail are the only ones that did that. So I'm guessing they must have somehow known or had access to the home records and knew those voicemails were left, I guess.
There were also some calls from earlier in that day, 4:50 and 51 seconds a.m. There's a 24-second call that went to voicemail.
Mm-hmm.
5:21 and 3 seconds, 23-second call that went to voicemail.
Yeah, there were a few during the like the morning and earlier in the day while she was still down in the valley, which I guess those might have been the ones they were looking for. But I don't think they had, because did they file the warrant for the cell phone records for Becky and for the voicemail records at the same time?
No, they did the voicemail records second.
Okay.
And that's where they said, you know, there were four messages from the 17th, or that appeared to be from the 17th.
Okay.
So it would have been, and this was requested on the 21st.
Okay, it's 4 days later. Gotcha. Okay, yeah. So if they had her cell record, they would have seen the couple calls going to voicemail in the morning. And then you've got the four calls from the landline to the cell phone that went to voicemail. I bet those are the four calls they were looking for. You know, they're in the relevant time frame. That must have been what they were looking for, to see what those voicemails were. So anyway, to kind of wrap things up, we are sort of still in a bit of limbo. Super weird that her phone had a signal during those calls. Also that, you know, it was her cell phone that was called, Robert was called, Javier was called, Christian was called, all during that time. But I guess the big takeaway that I got from that little section there, that actually does provide, well, it, I guess it leaves more questions than answers, is the big reason that we were looking at the home phone records was because we wanted to see, did she call Denny's to call in for work? And at first glance, we see the records and it says, you know, there's no call to Denny's. Easy enough. But then we find out that she called Robert, confirmed, five times. And those aren't in the records either, which means it didn't log all of the records, which means we still don't know if she called Denny's from home or not.
Right, yeah. The home records are lacking. Disappointing.
Right. All right. Well, Ian, I really appreciate your time. And you know, as we move on with this, I'm going to be working on some location stuff. And we've talked a little bit about some of that. But would you be a good resource, or could you point us in the right direction when we get into questions, you know, specific questions as far as how far a cell tower might reach when, you know, there's a big question coming up about when Robert's phone, we went through the time when he didn't have service, when he reconnects to a tower at 1023, to figure out, you know, what's the furthest away from that tower he could have been given the location of the other towers in the area. Definitely I need somebody to have a look at that.
Yeah, we can certainly take a look at it. That's additional thinking to see what kind of tower it was, because depending on the technology, it could be very long range, very short range. Most of them in this time frame would have covered several miles.
Right. And it said in the in like the summary report that the cell tower ranges were between 3 and 5 miles maximum. And so it's kind of a critically important where he was when he connects to this one. So I got on the map and drew the tower he connected to, a 5 mile circle. And if he was coming from up the hill, where he could have got into the very edge of that 5 mile circle, which would be like the earliest, the furthest away he could have been. And that creates some timing issues already. But then if that's where he connected, he would have been 1 mile from another tower and 2 miles from another tower. So, there's questions of, why would it connect to the one that's 5 miles away instead of the one that's 1 mile away or 2 miles away? But that's a conversation for another day, I guess.
Yeah, not a problem. That's one that it could have been something where the nearest cell site isn't always the clearest.
Mm-hmm.
But then you've also got, depending on how the phone was set up or what it was registered to last, different things like that can influence where it goes to make that next connection.
Sure.
We can take a look at it. No problem.
All right, Ian. Well, I appreciate your time, and I'll definitely be in touch when I start digging into all that stuff.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Take care, bud. Thanks.
Take care. Come on.